This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, SeavillePodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeavilleTomorrow.org, and he joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth, development, pie, lacrosse. You were telling me before we went on the air that you listened to that whole, how many extra innings? I'm so clueless. Overtimes for lacrosse. UVA won against, was it Maryland?
It was against Maryland,
yeah. It was against Maryland on Saturday afternoon. Three-hour lacrosse game, the longest in college sports history.
Seven overtimes.
How does it work? If they're tied, you play another 5 minutes?
I want to say it's 3 or 4 minutes. It's short. It's like 3 minutes.
Okay. And then the first person to score wins?
Right. It's sudden death.
Wow. And they did that 7 times before UVA finally scored.
Right.
Oh, man.
Now, I've been to a lot of sudden death overtime lacrosse games at Klockner Stadium. I wish I could have been there for this one. I had tickets. We couldn't make it. So my son Sam and I, we had a great adventure. We went out to Afton and went to the Claudius Crozet Tunnel, the original tunnel through Afton Mountain. So we hiked down the road.
I thought it was closed up.
No,
it's open?
It's open.
It's like a hiking trail?
Well, you hike down the tracks. Yeah, you're not. I'm not sure you're supposed to be hiking down there. We were very careful about it. I want our listeners to know. But he's doing a history project on Claudius Crozet.
Oh, perfect.
So I said, well, Sam, if you're going to write about Claudius Crozet,
go see what he did. Yeah,
you got to go see it.
Yeah, yeah,
you gotta
absolutely.
Live and breathe it.
What do you think?
He said it was a lot bigger than he thought it was going to be.
The tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a creek coming out of it. So that was sort of interesting. I mean,
oh,
it's full of water. We couldn't walk in because we didn't have the right...
I had no idea. Is it leaking from within?
I assume it's a combination of sort of down the side at the entrance, but then also it looks like from inside.
Yeah.
So I don't know how...
Interesting. Groundwater seeping through into the tunnel and then running out.
Yeah.
Cool.
But anyway, so we were doing that hike and filming it and getting audio recording to make this multimedia extravaganza for Sam's project.
Yeah.
And I knew we were missing the game, but I was okay with that because I knew I was recording it. Although I you know, when you can record something on your DVR, you can tell it whether to go some extra time. And I was like, UVA, you know, they're going to kill them.
It was on TV?
Yeah, it was on TV. It was on College Sports, ESPN.
Okay.
And so I told the recorder, record the game the normal time.
Uh-oh.
So if it goes to overtime, then I don't get it, you know, because it's past that window.
Yeah, yeah.
So we get back. I'm thinking, okay, I can just watch it when we get home. And then we get in the car after our hike, and it's in overtime at that point. And so we were sort of glued to the radio from that point on. And in between each overtime, we would do one of our little errands. So we get to
jump out of the car.
So we get to the Dairy Queen and Crozet. We're listening, and then it goes to another overtime. So we run in, get our blizzards. We come back out, and we haven't missed a beat. You know, John Freeman's right back at it. And then what did we do next? Then we took some pictures of the mural of Crozet and the train coming out of the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
And we took pictures of that.
You got to come in here and sit down. We're talking about you.
And so after we take pictures, we get back in the car, and we John Freeman picks up right where he left off on the.
He's talking about listening to you call this historic game.
Oh.
All these seven overtimes. John Freeman joins us.
Well, I hope it was a nice weekend for you listening to all seven overtimes.
What was it like for you sitting there?
It was surreal. I mean, it was very cloudy and almost a misty day. And by the time it gets to the fifth or sixth overtime, and they're talking about how it's the longest game in college lacrosse history, you just kind of forget about reality. And the plays that the teams were making were just unbelievable. I mean, they're plays that you see once or twice in a game. And it were happening every overtime. The goalies were making
They were just totally going for it. Yeah, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Well, UVA's goalie was penalized for a minute. And so a backup goalie had to come in with no preparation.
During one of the overtimes.
Yes.
During one of the overtimes, made a clutch save of a really intense shot on goal.
Yeah. I mean, diving. He'd only played in 5 games. We're talking about Mark Wade, who's a junior and only played in 5 games this year and never really seen significant playing time. And he has to come in. And not only did he have to come in, he had to come in when Virginia was a man down because of the penalty. So the other team's playing with more players where they score 60% of the time.
Yep.
And
they still hold them. They still hold
them. And he holds them,
yep.
Which they did 3 times in man-down opportunities in the overtimes. It was just it's surreal. I woke up on Sunday and had to listen to the game a little bit to hear it back and to find out if it had actually happened.
I watched it. I watched the replay last night because it's already now an instant classic on ESPN. So I watched it. I got through the fifth overtime and then I had to go to bed. So I haven't saved on, you know, overtime.
I was like me on Saturday. I keeled over between the fifth and sixth and just took a little power nap and was ready for the seventh.
How long is one overtime?
4 minutes.
4 minutes.
But in college lacrosse, each coach gets a timeout during the overtimes.
Yeah.
So for every new overtime, the coach gets a timeout. So it's they get the ball. They call a timeout. They lose the ball. The other team gets the ball.
So
they call a timeout.
It's a four-minute overtime, non-stop. Seven of those, and then eight timeouts as well.
Yes.
Each two team. 14 timeouts.
Yeah, there's a ton of timeouts. You're more the math. But we had a baseball game right after. This is Dave Kane in North Carolina. And I don't think they got into their baseball broadcast. That started at 1. The baseball game started at 1. Lacrosse game started at noon. They didn't get into the baseball game until the bottom of the 8th inning. It ended in the top of the 9th.
Now, the UVA also, the women played after that. That's the game I went to. And they played Duke, and that was another exciting game. Unfortunately, UVA was on the losing end of that. But it was a last-second goal by Duke with like 11 seconds left.
Well, yeah. I had to there's a webcasting service called ACC Select. And I had volunteered to be their broadcaster for that game as well.
Oh, Lord.
John. It had no voice. And I apologize to anybody who heard that. But I just turned the volume up on the microphone and just whispered through it.
My goodness.
It was I couldn't speak for the rest of the night or the weekend. I just now got my voice back.
And who finally scored the winning goal for UVA?
For Virginia, Brian Carroll, who's actually done that more times in his career than any other Virginia player in
history. Scored the winning goal.
Yep.
Wow. And what was the final score?
10-9.
10-9 with seven overtimes.
Well, it's unbelievable. They score 18 or 19, 18 goals in regulation.
Amazing.
And then it takes them 18 goals in 60 minutes, and then it takes them 40-some minutes or however long the overtime. I've lost track of all time.
Yeah.
However long the overtimes were, and nobody scored until the very end.
There you go. John Freeman. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue our conversation with Brian Wheeler. And John, as we go out here, we'll listen to you call this.
Overtime seven. Gladding behind the goal. Gladding up the right pipe. Crowd wants it. Gladding goal line extended left. Gladding throws it way out to Brian Carroll. Carroll Schimmel in. Carroll down the left side. Carroll fires. Score! It's over! Yes!
You know, Brian Carroll is not known as the dodging midfielder. Recognized he had some time and space, and obviously a tired Maryland defender. And Brian's patented overhand shot off stick side. It was a great shot to finish the game.
Brian Wheeler joins us. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. And now let us transition perhaps from lacrosse, UVA athletics, to growth development and local politics.
We have some news to break on local politics, Coy.
You want to break some news right here?
We do.
I got a breaking news sounder, but it says WINA, but let's do it anyway.
This is a breaking news update from News Radio 1070 WINA.
Brian Wheeler from Charlottesville Tomorrow breaking some news right here, and you're going to hear it.
I spoke to a new candidate today who's going to run for the Board of Supervisors from the Samuel Miller District. That's the seat currently held by Sally Thomas, who has not announced at this time what her plans are. But the expectation is that she will announce that she's retiring.
That's a rumor I heard.
The announcement will be made sometime in April.
Okay.
And this person is Madison Cummings, who is a Democrat. He's going to run as a Democrat, North Garden resident. He's lived in the community over 30 years, formerly on the county school board, where he served two terms. The first is one where he was appointed by Sally Thomas to be on the school board before they had elections. And then he was elected and was the first elected member to represent the Samuel Miller District on the school board. And that was from 97 to 2004 that he was on the school board. We've got a story about this up on our news center at seavilletomorrow.org. And so this is big news because we now have a contested race, it sounds like, for Samuel Miller, because there's another candidate.
Already declared?
John Lowry, who has not declared which party or whether he will run as an independent. But we know we have at least two people who are now expressing interest.
He's not running as a Democrat, John Lowry. We know that.
He is not set.
Okay.
He could certainly show up and try to get that nomination.
Yeah.
There is a third person who's interested, but that person has not gone public with their intentions at this point.
So you can't mention his or her
name. I cannot mention his or her name. However, I did speak to that person today, and they're trying to figure out when they are going to announce something.
Yeah.
I talked to Fred Hudson, who's chairman of the County Democrats. Mr. Hudson said he is expecting a contested race for the Democratic nomination from the Samuel Miller District. So he's expecting at least two people to contest for that, one of those being Madison Cummings.
Interesting. So breaking news, you heard it here first, the Samuel Miller District for the Board of Supervisors race. So that's going to be contested. We've got...
In the county, then, we've got the Ryo seat. We have one candidate who's announced for that, Rodney Thomas, a Republican. David Slutsky is the incumbent, and he has not announced.
Whether he's going to seek re-election.
That's correct.
Okay. But chances are he will.
We're expecting an announcement in April one way or the other.
Okay. So then that would be contested. How many seats are up on the Board of Supervisors?
Three. Three of the six.
Samuel Miller District, Ryo District.
And Jack Jewett, where Dennis Rooker is running for re-election.
Is he got a challenger at this point?
He has announced, and he does not have a challenger at this point.
At this point. Interesting. That's going to be interesting. And how many seats for the Charlottesville City Council?
There are two seats up of the five, and we now have a new candidate for City Council as well. The Daily Progress broke this story in the past week, and that candidate is an independent named Andrew Williams. And I spoke to Mr. Williams today. We've not written a story about that. I tend to not want to write stories until I actually talk to the candidate and interview them because I want to make sure of their credentials and whatnot.
Right, right.
And so I spoke briefly to Mr. Williams today. We're going to do a more in-depth interview soon and get some more information up. But based on the Daily Progress reporting, and congratulations to Roshana Dixit for getting the scoop on this.
Roshana.
He is a, I believe, 22-year-old employee of State Farm, but he's also a student at Piedmont Virginia Community
College. Oh, I remember
reading
about that, yeah.
So he's expected to seek a seat as an independent. Now, the Democrats have three people who are announced, and the Democrats have closed the doors on additional nominations at this point. I spoke to Jennifer McKeever, who's co-chair of the City Democrats, and their deadline was last Friday. So they have now locked in on three candidates who will compete for two spots to get the nomination. Dave Norris, the current mayor, running for re-election. Julian Taliaferro, running for re-election. And then the new person to the race is Kristen Zekas, running as a Democrat. And so it's funny, Seville Weekly, in their edition today, Will Goldsmith wrote a story, and the headline on the story was, Norris will get the nomination. The question is, who's number two?
Yeah, yeah.
So at least from the point of view of the Seville Weekly, that seems to be where the race is going.
That's
that
the
front.
Scuttlebutt that Julian Taliaferro is not a lock for renomination among the Democrats.
I guess I would say not as much of a lock as Dave Norris.
Yeah.
That said, Julian Taliaferro had standing behind him virtually every constitutional officer who's a Democrat in the city of Charlottesville. So he's got a lot of support by the party faithful and current elected officials. The question is, it's sort of old guard, new guard. Kristen Zekas represents, you know, the Obama campaign and all of her organizing efforts that went into the Obama effort. So you might expect that there might be a younger, more energized group ready to support a candidate.
Could
like
be a generational
that.
Thing, yeah. Interesting, interesting.
Julian Taliaferro has a lot of support from both his record as, you know, chief of the fire department, but now as an incumbent on council. Of course, the advantage typically goes to the incumbent.
In any election, sure.
In any election.
Yeah. Now, how's it going to work? When's the when do they decide, the Democrats?
The city Democrats are, as I've mentioned previously, are going to have a what's called an unassembled caucus. An assembled caucus is what they've had in the past, where they lock you in a room and
over at Charlottesville High School,
you can't
yeah.
leave the room until they pick a nominee. And typically that's had, you know, in the neighborhood of hundreds of people involved. What the city party has said they want to do is get more people involved. Again, I think sort of fueling off the interest in the last presidential election. So in the city, they will be having an assembled caucus, unassembled caucus, and that's going to be on May 9th.
May 9th is the voting day in the city for the Democratic primary, and there was one place to vote, right? But you can stop by any time.
It's not a primary.
It's
unassembled
a caucus.
Right. So you have to show up at Burley Middle School during this window that'll be all day, basically, on the 9th. You have to sign a loyalty pledge to the city Democrats that you would not oppose, you know, somebody who is not a Democrat. That you would Yeah, you would not oppose a Democrat that's on the ballot.
Right.
And then they
so you won't. Don't sign that you're going to vote Democrat. You sign that you wouldn't oppose Democrat.
I don't know the wording exactly. But this is 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on May 9th, Burley Middle School is when you would, if you're a registered voter in the city, that's when you'd be able to go
right.
and indicate your preference for city council. Now, the county Democrats are going to have one of the more traditional caucuses, an assembled caucus, on May 11th, Monday, May 11th. That's when the Samuel Miller seat will be resolved and they'll pick a nominee for that seat.
I got it.
Now, the Republicans in the city, they haven't yet scheduled any type of, and we haven't heard anyone declare.
They have not scheduled anything, and they have not, there are no declarations that I'm aware of.
Okay. And in the county, that some of the folks, is anybody running as a Republican in the county?
Yep. Rodney Thomas is running as a Republican.
Sure, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, good stuff. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather. We'll talk more when we get back. I want to do a programming clarification. Tomorrow, Thursday, on Charlottesville Right Now, we're going to talk with Bill Bowling. Thursday, 2 days from now. I got my days mixed up. Thursday, we'll talk with Bill Bowling. We're going to talk about this new book about the high-functioning alcoholic. That is Thursday on this program. Tomorrow, we'll talk with Mark Lorenzoni about the Charlottesville 10-miler coming up. And we'll also talk with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia, about UFOs and the recent UFO that was widely reported up and down the East Coast. You hear about this?
I did, but I didn't really get the details.
Everybody was freaking out.
Do they know what it was?
Yeah, it was a rocket.
Ah.
It was a rocket.
It wasn't a North Korean rocket, was it?
It was a Russian rocket, oh, okay. Part of a Russian rocket. So they sent some people up to the space station, and part of it was coming
they
back
dropped,
and falling into
something.
The Atlantic Ocean.
Uh-huh.
And it was far, far away, but it looked like it was close. Everybody was going nuts. Anyway,
a
rocket.
I've seen a UFO.
Have you?
Definitely.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
When?
Long time ago.
For real?
I couldn't explain it.
So, by
silent
you're not saying you saw aliens. You just saw an unidentified flying object.
Right.
You didn't see space aliens or anything.
No, but it was this strange bright light, silent.
Yeah.
Following me down the neighborhood, you know. Jean, if you're listening, she remembers this. I mean, I came in like white, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I was out walking the dog. I was like,
"Tell me, Brian. Tell me. When was it?"
Oh, this was would have been around 1990.
Okay. So, and you're out walking the dog in the neighborhood?
Walking the dog.
And then?
This bright light starts coming up the street. You know, it was way up high.
Yeah.
But there was no sound. And it was just one light.
Was it? So it's not Pegasus, because Pegasus is loud when Pegasus comes in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't blinking? Was it a spotlight?
No. Just sort of a bright moving light.
But low enough in the sky where it wasn't like a plane far away.
Right.
So did it light up the ground?
It seemed really bright. No, it wasn't that close.
And you look at it for
all right,
a while.
Now that everyone thinks I'm crazy, we ought to
No, I don't think you're crazy at all, because I saw something, too, years ago when I was driving down the highway.
Yeah.
A bright light come up behind the car. Scared the hell out of me.
Just don't know who's
And then
out
it was
there,
gone.
Listening.
Then it was, poof, it was gone.
Now that they heard me talking about it, they're going to come back, I know.
Anyway, we're going to talk about UFOs tomorrow with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, cvilletomorrow.org. I was on the downtown mall this weekend.
I was going to ask you, what did you think?
With my beautiful children. And I was explaining to them about the bricks.
Yep.
I'll tell you, here's my thoughts. Number one, I didn't know Splendora had so much yummy stuff in there.
Excellent stuff.
Really blew me away.
Good decor.
And my kids knew all about it because Allison takes them there pretty regularly. Number two, I had no idea they were so far along on this mall project.
Yes.
I mean, I was shocked.
It is shocking. And I have to admit.
I mean, they're getting her done.
Jim Tolbert, if you're listening, he's the head of Neighborhood Development Services with the city of Charlottesville. I just want to say hats off to the city because I really, and the contractor, of course, who's working on this.
But yeah, yeah.
I think the project's going really well. Now, they've been lucky. They haven't found problems underneath. They had good weather for the most part. So luck's been on their side, but hey.
But there's still guys out there busting their butts making this happen every day.
Yeah, they are. And news of the they have a great website for this project, mydowntownmall.com. Great pictures. They have a blog that feeds this stuff out.
It looks really good, too.
And so, we've been following this, and it's fun to watch. I'm down there every day
getting
lunch. but they're moving fast. And as I said, four of the seven blocks all have their new bricks. They said here on the next couple of weeks, tree grates will be installed. If you're down there now, the trees are sort of protected and nothing's finished around the trees.
Yeah.
But they're going to be putting in the new grates.
The finish work around the
but
trees.
It's looking really good.
Yeah. I was definitely impressed and sort of shocked because I expected to see a lot more closed off.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
And I was one of those people saying, no way. They'll never finish on time. There are going to be major problems underneath. And it hasn't happened. So I'm applaud the city for keeping this one moving.
Amazing. When's it, do they have a projected date for completion?
I think it's May 1st.
And is that has it always been May 1st or is that early?
Yeah. Oh, wait. The grand celebration on May 29th. So I think they're finished earlier.
Sometime in May.
But they've got a little cushion there to get to the celebration.
Yeah.
But it's looking really good. And I would encourage people to, if you don't get on the Downtown Mall, at least check out that website, mydowntownmall.com, and you can see all the pictures.
Good stuff. Going to be a fun summer downtown in Charlottesville.
And, you know, this weather, of course, is bringing out more people and the tables. You know, the restaurants that have things are finished in front of the restaurant, they're starting to bring out their little tables.
We were down there on Sunday. We went swimming over at ACAC, and then we went to the Downtown Mall. There were lots of people out eating.
We had a consultant come from out of town from Boston, and they called us up, and they said, we want to come talk to you about Charlottesville. And
from Boston?
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, they're a consultant for another town in the country, and I'm not going to name their name, partially because I don't remember it. Yeah. But
that's good enough
another,
for me.
Another small town in the country, in the southeast, that is trying to create a downtown center, and they're looking at other places that have been successful.
Right.
And Charlottesville, of course, popped up on the radar. So the consultant came in, and I brought our whole team together. There were four of us, and we just sort of, you know, reflected on what we like about downtown Charlottesville and what makes the Downtown Mall work. And we talked about the history of the mall and the anchors at each end of the mall. And you would have loved it.
Yeah, talking to the history. Yeah, I would have loved that.
But we talked about how the you know, what I look for when I'm out and about, which isn't very often, but when I go to another community, you know, what draws me in is those sort of the bricks. It's pedestrian friendly, the trees.
Benches.
And I've said this before, but, you know, you don't mind walking the entire length of the mall. And in fact, I'll walk the whole length and then do it again to
and
go back
do
to
it back.
The office.
Sure.
And I don't think twice about that.
But
if you told me I had to get from there to a store, you know, at the other end,
walking
in
blocks.
A traditional neighborhood.
Well, how many blocks is it?
I don't know. I guess it's 8 or 10.
Yeah. If you're in New York City and somebody said it's 10 blocks up, you'd say I'm getting a cab.
Or take the subway.
Yeah.
But if you were at a place like I don't know, Holly Mead Town Center, if I parked at the Target and then I had to pick up something at the grocery store,
you'd get in your car.
I'd get in my car.
I would too,
because it's car oriented. You know, there's a big parking lot there.
Yeah, and where are you going to walk for anyway? If you did want to walk, you're going to be walking through cars the whole way.
So we tried to impress upon this consultant how that sort of landscape and the you know, the orientation of the mall. And I'm not a planner, but fortunately two of our part-time staff are in the master's program at UVA in urban planning, so they were able to use the right terminology to describe what they liked about it.
Well, the dirty little secret of the mall is that for so many years it was not successful. You know, I mean, if you lay those bricks down in the mid-70s, you really can't point at that mall and say it's a success. You know, definitely a success until what, the mid-90s? Late 90s?
And the consultant was, you know, picking our brain about what led to the critical mass that got it going and successful. And
the movie theater in the Ice Park. That's when it started
Omni
to explode.
Hotel, Fridays
had a lot
after
to do
five.
With the economy, though, as well.
Yeah.
But they came in right at the right time. Yeah.
And so we talked about the different events that you need to have to draw people down, that Fridays after five has been a big motivator to get people in the community down there. So anyway. It was very interesting. And
there you go.
Enjoy talking about the mall always.
Indeed. What else is going on? We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow.
Let's see. We've got, this was sort of interesting. A little bit of planning intrigue in the city.
Yeah.
We like to, you know, report on planning intrigue. You remember back when I said last fall that the City Planning Commission voted to defund the Meadow Creek Parkway? Do you remember that? They sort of had the capital budget in front of them.
Yes,
they saw some money moving towards the project, and they were like, "This project doesn't make any sense. You know, we need more parks, not more roads." So they took a vote and they voted against it.
The Planning Commission, not the City Council.
Right. City Planning Commission.
And they were authorized to do that.
Yeah,
it would have to be approved by the City Council.
That's right. It's just a recommendation that goes to council.
Okay.
And in the city, councilors are often there for these these public hearings at the planning commission level. That doesn't happen in the county. In the city, they often have combined public hearings.
Yeah.
So you've got councilors sort of sitting off in the media gallery who will opine on different things at different times.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Dave Norris was one of those councilors who was there and heard, you know, this vote take place. So lo and behold, last couple weeks ago, March 24th, I believe, city council gets the recommendations from the planning commission about the capital budget.
And the Meadow Creek Parkway, it does not have funding.
No, that wasn't included. That was omitted. And Mayor Norris raises his hand, I guess, and says, hey, I was there. I thought they voted not to put money into the Meadow Creek Parkway. And staff basically said, you know what? They didn't put it in writing, and it's not in front of you right now.
Wait a minute. So let me back up a minute. So the Planning Commission has a public meeting at which they have a vote to defund any city expenditures towards making the Meadow Creek Parkway happen.
Right.
That vote, then the recommendation, that whole package goes to city council, and that vote is not included in that recommendation.
That's correct.
It's omitted. And the only way they knew about it is because Dave Norris happened to be at the meeting.
Yeah, well,
so did staff just not put it?
Charlottesville Tomorrow certainly would have pointed it out after the fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, fortunately, Mayor Norris was there.
So what happened? Did Gary O'Connell's staff just decide to change?
Well, we've sort of inquired about this after the fact. And staff now say it's been resolved and they figured it out. Whatever the problem was, I can't speak to what the problem was.
Yeah.
And in fact,
could have just been a simple mistake, paperwork or whatever.
Well, Leslie Beauregard, who works on the budget stuff for the city, I mean, she was the one who said, quote, if they had something in writing, I would have included it in the material. And so that was what led.
That doesn't make any sense.
So we called.
Aren't there minutes?
We called up Jason Pearson, who is chair of the Planning Commission, who said, quote, in fact, if in fact council did not receive any information about our recommendations, then I will forward them directly to council by email.
Wow. Which means I can't trust staff to inform the city council what the planning commission is doing.
He said, quote, I think it's the responsibility of staff to make sure commission recommendations are conveyed. So
of course.
We've got a story about that up on our news center. I don't want to belabor it. It sounds like it's been resolved, whatever the hang up was. But, you know, a lot of people in the community who saw the Planning Commission make that principled vote and who are opposed to the parkway, you know, were cheering.
And they were ticked off when it didn't get to city council.
Well, I don't know if they even realized it until they read our story.
So now tell me what happens now. Is it now with city council and do they have to approve that?
I believe...
Or this is just a recommendation for the budget.
I believe this discussion will continue Thursday in another budget work session. So this is a part of the city's budget process. The conversation continues. But it was interesting to have Mayor Norris point out that was omitted from their materials.
Goodness gracious.
So a little bit of intrigue there. We like
indeed.
To
now, what money does the city have to spend on the Meadow Creek Parkway anyway? For the... the intersection?
They call it McIntyre Road Extended, of course. And that's their segment of the road. Related, you know, that's through McIntyre Park.
Yeah. It's funny how it's now they're referring it to McIntyre Road Extended, which was the name in the 60s and 70s. And in the 80s and 90s, it was Meadow Creek Parkway, but now they're back to that original name.
I don't want to add to the confusion, so we always refer to it in our story as the Meadow Creek Parkway.
Yeah.
We just call it one road.
That's what it is.
It's in the city, it's in the county, it has an interchange, it's called
Connects to
Parkway.
McIntyre Road, yeah.
We do put in parentheses, because I know somebody will email me if I don't, that the city calls it McIntyre Road Extended. But so we try to cover all the bases.
When the city changed their mind? Because in the early 80s, they had that big announcement that they were changing the name.
Yeah.
In 1983, I think.
I don't know.
Interesting. What's going on with Whole Foods?
Whole Foods, that project is still alive, Coy. I know you're very interested in it.
I like Whole Foods. It's too expensive, but I like it.
According to one of the planners in the city of Charlottesville, quote, the project is alive and currently under review.
Mm.
So they have submitted a new site plan.
With the city or the county?
With the city.
Okay.
Because remember, they crossed over from Albemarle Place, which was in the county, got stalled because of sewage issues. That development's not moving at the moment. And they jumped across the street to near the Kmart and the Gold's Gym.
Which put them in the city.
Took out the Terrace Triple. Now it's right there. And they've done the preliminary excavation and preparation.
So it's under review, which means it's under review by who, the developer or the city?
By city planning staff. And eventually it will come in front of the planning commission and city council as required.
Okay. And that's going to be a big parking deck and a big grocery store
that
faces the Kmart, right?
faces the Hillsdale Drive, which the Hillsdale Drive extended will run through there. Now, the expectation is only the first little part of Hillsdale Drive will be stubbed in, and then it's going to run into the Seminole.
The back of the Seminole, yeah.
Until there's money from the state to finish the rest of Hillsdale.
And then they'll tear down the Seminole and continue it up in front of the Giant.
Through that other shopping center.
Yep.
And then over to where the senior center and the rest of Hillsdale Drive is.
Right. And yep. They go all the way up to Rio,
yep.
up to the
so
putt-putt.
That's part of the, I mean, the city and county are in agreement that they need that parallel road system, both on that side and then on the county side, they need it with Berkmar Drive on the other side.
Okay. Well, we got about a minute left. What do you want to leave folks with?
Let's make sure everyone knows that tomorrow evening, the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors is holding a public hearing on the budget and the tax rate. And that'll take place at 6 o'clock, I believe, tomorrow night. And you can sign up in advance to speak. It's at Lane Auditorium in the county office building.
That's going to be huge.
Well, yeah, it's the second public hearing, so they've already had one.
Yeah.
After that first one, they had some more work sessions. They decide what tax rate to advertise.
Which is what?
They have advertised 74.2 cents.
Which is an increase?
Which it's an increase of the rate, but the way that it's getting framed is for the average residential property owner, the amount you pay the county will be roughly the same in this new budget as it was in the current budget.
So they're raising the rate so that they can keep the inflow of public money the same.
Because property values have gone down, yeah, they're raising the rate.
Interesting.
So it is a rate increase.
So there'll be a lot of people there tomorrow night who aren't happy with that, I'm sure.
Well, yeah.
And vice versa, yeah.
But, you know, in that first public hearing, the supervisors got a lot of feedback about the reserve fund that they were trying to create.
Right.
And after that's when David Slutsky changed his opinion about that, and that led to this lower rate. So
that's tomorrow. It starts when?
Starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow night at the county office.
You going to be there?
We will be covering that.
Charlottesville tomorrow will be there. They'll have it for you. In case you can't go, they'll have it for you. Thank you, Brian, very much.
Thank you, Coy.
Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.